Session number 10420, Rule 54.
Colonel W.I. Watson, Reel 54. You're getting close to the end of the Sicilian campaign, Colonel.
Yes. Now, I think I made a small mistake in the last tape, in as much as I called the little town of Acerale, which we'd entered, and described it as being on the coast, but it wasn't, and it was inland. It was the town of Riposto, which was on the coast, and we entered this town despite opposition on or about the 11th of August. The enemy had been in it, and we pushed them out. However, they did have mortars in the dry riverbed beyond the town, and we were in contact with the enemy, with the Germans, of course, beyond Riposto, on the edge of the riverbank. And some of my patrols got there and heard the enemy talking, the Germans talking, but had to pull back. But we cleared the whole of the town. And it was there that a little shipyard had four trawler-like sized ships on their stocks, and they were undoubtedly fishermen's trawlers that went fishing in the Mediterranean. And also, there had been there in the village, or small town, a German naval headquarters, and about the time we entered, the commandos had made a raid from the sea to get into the headquarters and seize some of the German papers. But when we got into the town, it was a comparatively quiet day, except for a certain amount of shelling. But you always had to be careful. There were no mines, no booby traps, no snipers. And you had to always feel your way into such places, and that we had to do. However, that night we were relieved by the 7th Green Hearts, and as we drew away, we heard two terrific explosions, and these were the bridges across the dry riverbeds beyond Riposto to hold up the advance of the Green Hearts. Now, this was the last operation we did in Sicily, the very last operation, and we faded out of all future operations, which didn't go on for much longer. And we were, as I say, relieved by the 7th Green Heart. And on the 13th of August, the very next day, we went to the most glorious resting area to rest. And it was, I remember it so well, it was high up above the sea. There were rocks and cliffs going down to the beach. The beach was too rocky to permit us to bathe, but there was a little track wound its way down to the blue Mediterranean down below. And our mess was under two old mulberry trees, with, as I say, a path down the steep terraces to the sea. The terraces were, in fact, all vineyards. And it really was with the most wonderful sight, with such a view, because you look northwards to Taormina, and then southwards towards Catania. And behind you was, of course, Mount Etna, towering up above you. And I considered at the time that the word romantic wasn't good enough for it. And we sat under those two mulberry trees with an old stone table that was there, and there were stone seats all around the table, and that was our mess table under the two mulberry trees. And of course, the blue Mediterranean down below was really wonderful. There was a farmhouse nearby, obviously a prosperous one. And like all the farmhouses of that kind in Sicily, the living quarters were above the presses, wine presses, and the vats. And I can remember, too, seeing a little boat in the morning, the next morning, just off the coast, and he was a squid fisherman. And his mate in the boat had a bucket with a glass bottom, and he put it into the water, and that enabled him to see the floor of the ocean, you might say. And he had a spear, and he speared the octopus and brought it up into his boat. And he did, in fact, come and, I think I'm right in saying, offer his catch to us, but we weren't particularly anxious to have breakfast on squid or octopus, and so we thanked him very much and sent him on his journey. And the next day, our role was all over. It was all peaceful, and there was a little gunfire somewhere near where the 69th Brigade had taken up the chase, and the brigadier held a conference, and we were once more talking about courses and training. And we spent the time washing and cleaning our clothes. Not that it was very easy, because the dust was all lava dust, and it's really black and dirty. Anyhow, the next day, I went back to my B echelon to see the quartermaster and the MTO, and I found everything there in apple pie order. And Eric Short was the MTO, and he really was quite first class. He's incidentally still alive and lives in South Africa, and I hear from him from time to time. But he really was first class, and loved being with the battalion. I remember too, about this time, there was a very alert sentry, and he thought there was an invasion on hand, but it turned out to be the invasion boats were the sardine fishermen pushing out to sea once more, as if no war had ever occurred. And that particular day, which would be about the 14th of August, I went to brigade headquarters to discuss the future training, and everything was in the countryside was back to normal. The peasants were sitting outside their cottages and in the evening sun. But the battalion, all the three battalions, had then to revert to three companies due to the shortages of officers and men as a result of the operations. And it was then that I counted that I had only 9 Teesdale irregulars out of the 133 which I had recruited here in 1938-39. There were only 9 left. Mind, some had gone to the duplicate battalion, others weren't fit and hadn't been passed fit enough for army service, but others had been killed and wounded, and there were 9 left when I counted them in this day in August.
How many of the battalion had you left? Can you recall?
Well, the battalion was about 700 strong, and I'd only have about 400, I suppose, left then. But we were reduced down to 3 companies' strength. And then on the 15th of August, the next day, we heard that the 7th Greenhards had entered Taormina. And we also held, it was a Sunday, and we have had our first church service that we'd had since we arrived in Sicily. And I remember, too, it was, of course, oh, so peaceful then. And it really was a most lovely day, and we weren't bothered with anything on Sunday. And in the evening, I listened, and many of us else did, many of the others did too, to the Palm Court Orchestra playing in Torquay. We could hear it on the wireless, and we could hear him singing from the west coast of Scotland. And we spent another day there, and I know the general came round, and he told us that it would be all over in 48 hours. But we weren't allowed to stay there very long, because on the 17th of August, we moved to a new area by Riposto, and it was a hot and sticky, dirty area, lava dust, of course, and it was behind. It was behind us was Mount Etna, but it was interesting there to go round the town on quietly and without any interference from the enemy to visit it and to see this little shipbuilding yard and where they were building these four trawlers who hadn't been interfered with in any way. They hadn't been destroyed, and to study the German rear guard positions, have a really good look around this quaint little Sicilian town. The next day, I think I went back and visited Primosole Bridge, the Battle of Primosole Bridge, and it was still a terrible state. But all our casualties, all the chaps had been killed and buried, all had crosses on their graves. So they would all be moved into the cemetery, which exists there today. And, of course, there is the memorial that I've already referred to. But in all this business, we were never allowed to stay put for any length of time. Now, at the end of the month, we moved to a place called Gardini. And I had my battalion headquarters in what was known as the Villa Prince, or Prince, P-R-I-N-Z, I know it was. And it had a superb view. To the east, you looked out across the vineyards and citrus groves to the Mediterranean, and to the south you could look towards Catania, and to the southwest you had Mount Etna towering above you, and to the right round to the west you had the mountains of Upper Sicily around Mount Etna. And it was an old house, I think about 1830, and I remember A company there in their area, it was Spike Galloway, shot a rabid dog. It had rabies, and they shot that dog. I think the house, as I say, was built in about 1830, and we had battalion headquarters in a very large wine press and vat, but all the vats were all empty. All these huge, great oak barrels, but they were all absolutely empty. And there were boxes and boxes of Italian SD caps unused. Now, my batman persuaded me to sleep in the house, and I occupied the main bedroom, but I really couldn't. It seemed to me to be so enclosed and stuffy, and I know I put my camp bed and slept on my camp bed by the window. But there were geckos, you know, the little lizards that crawl about the walls. And they were there, I remember, feeding on the insects that were on the walls. And the wardrobe that was in the room was full of ladies' dresses, and there were ladies' hats on the top of this wardrobe. And this is where we spent a few days. Sicilians used to come and collect around us at night, and they used to sing to us opera. They sang superbly, just these Sicilian peasants. As I say, I slept indoors, but I didn't after a night or two. I think I went out into the open once more. But I can well remember that I can see the well outside with a donkey drinking out of the pool by where the well was. And most of the women seemed pregnant. And I warned the doctor that he was in for a busy time long. However, but such expectations always fail. And we were warned that we were to move to Syracuse, right back to Syracuse, from almost where we started from. However, Monte, at the very last day of August, paid us a visit, and he had the whole of the 6th Battalion and the 8th Battalion around him, and he said that we had to be left out now owing to our state of strength and what we'd been through, but wherever he went, he would always have the 50th Division. And there was a sort of, oh, from all the chaps standing round him. And then he said, well, you never know, I may be going home. It was about then, I think, about then that I watched the invasion of Italy proper from the Sicilian coast. Anyhow, for 2 days into September now, we waited for transport, and we eventually got there to Syracuse to relieve the 7th Battalion of the Royal Marines. And we went into an area between the Lentini Road and north of Syracuse. It was a shadeless, dirty area, and everything I found there was in a deplorable, slack, sloppy state. C Company were in a large block of flats, in the grounds of which were hordes of Italian prisoners, and right in the middle of the Italian prisoner of war camp were 14 Germans. Well, the Italians could quite well look after the 14 Germans. They wouldn't let the Germans. Wasn't much love lost between the two. And I then read the Riot Act, not to my own chaps, but read the Riot Act to all concerned. I refused to be under the command of the camp commandant, and I won the day. And I refused to be responsible for the prisoners of war in the camp, because the Italians seemed to be able to come and go just as they liked, and I wasn't going to be responsible for this. And I insisted that the Italian, if it put on any guards, which it had to do, had to be absolutely first class. Turnout had to be meticulous. And I did hear later that we did, in fact, create an extremely good impression. Now, that night, I suppose it would be the 3rd of September, that evening, I was told that I could have 14 days leave in Egypt. And joined Montes Plain the very next morning at 6:30 on Catania Aerodrome with other COs from the 50th and 51st Division. So on the 4th of September, very early in the morning, I left the battalion without ceremony and caught Montes Plain on the Catania runway. There were no farewells, and I was under the impression that I was to return home to England with the battalion, whither it was eventually bound. The only other CO I can remember on the plane was, in fact, Jock Wilson, who commanded the 1st London Scottish. That evening, I took out to dinner, gave him dinner in Shepherd's, the pilot, who was a quiet, insignificant American, a pleasant young chap, and he produced, I remember at dinner, packets of photographs of his family, and I had the whole story of that from his family. Well, I had 14 days leave. We needn't bother where I went to in those 14 days leave, and after they were up, I reported to the military secretary. Now, when you went to Cairo on leave like that, you had to report to the Prevost, and the Prevost would tell you where you had to go afterwards or anything like that. And when I reported to the Prevost, I was told I had to report to the military secretary. And I duly went there, I think on about the 17th of September. He was a chap called Latter, and he told me, to my horror, that I had to take a quiet job on the Middle East Officers Selection Board under General Kemp, selecting regular officers at Mahdi, which was outside Cairo. And I also found out that I forfeited my right to go home if the battalion went home. And frankly, I was extremely annoyed, having gone all through this, to be told I had to go out to the Middle East Office Selection Board and I'd forfeited my right to go home, when I was told by the general that I was to get, I imagined when I got home, a quiet administrative job somewhere in England or a command of yet another battalion. It might be a second-rate battalion or something like that. And here I was told I wasn't going home, and I never got home. The next day I reported to General Kemp, and I said to him, why on earth do you want a territorial lieutenant colonel to come and sit on your board? Oh, he said, we don't want that Colchester atmosphere in the regular army any more longer in the future. And anyhow, I saw how things worked, and for two or three days later, I sat on the board, and we passed 7 out of 13. And that was the last time the board sat. But it was rather interesting, inasmuch as there was one, that each candidate had to give us a lecture on any subject he liked to talk about. I mean, some of them were quite ridiculous. Some talked about the use of the Bren gun in the Western Desert. One chap talked about how to use a hand camera. But there was one sergeant, young sergeant, who I think had been a commando, and he was in the rifle brigade. And he came in and said, gentlemen, I'm now going to give you a talk on how to use a knife in close combat. In other words, how to knife a chap. He said, I've got this knife from the cookhouse. It's very dirty and very ill-balanced. Then he told us how to knife the chap, I think, behind the shoulder blades, if you wanted to finish him off. And he then said, would any member of the board like to come out, and I will demonstrate how to use this knife. And the General Kemp said, no, thank you very much. I think you've given us a splendid lecture. I think that'll do. And years after I started to reform the battalion in 1948, 49, I had to go to a conference, an army conference in York, And the chap came up to me and said, "You won't remember me, sir." I said, "By God, I do. You're the chap who told us how to use a knife at your officer's selection board." And he was. Years after, he was a captain in the rifle brigade. Anyhow, that put paid to the Middle East Officer Selection Board. And I was then told towards the end of September to report to the Adjutant General's Department, AG-16, and which selected officers for the OCTU. And there was a lot of my time wasted, I found. What should have happened was that CO should send in lists of potential officers in their regiments or their battalions to the AG-16 branch, and this they weren't doing. So I was told to go to the regiments or the battalions themselves and get the lists from the CO and interview these chaps. And none of them had to be informed as to why I was interviewing them. And I merely told them that I wanted technical information of the units who'd had battle experience. And I first of all started with the 3rd Tank Regiment out at Beni Youssef outside Cairo, and I found 13. I then went in during the first week of October. You couldn't do them in a day, of course. I then went to the 7th Rifle Brigade, and they were originally the 1st London Rifle Brigade, Territorial Battalion. I think I only found about 6 there, because they had in fact been in battle, considerable amount of battle to operations. And then on the 11th, from the 11th to the 14th of October, I went to the Yorkshire Hussars. The CO gave me a very cold reception, and there was a very depressed atmosphere about the whole regiment, because they'd never been into battle.